Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, our first show here in 2014. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And man, we thought we were out of the woods with Monday Night Football being done and over, but oh no, there is still football going on tonight, the national championship game in college football.
Man, are you kidding me? Number one, Florida State against my boys from down on the plains, the Auburn Tigers. And if you cannot hear it in my voice right now, Sean Wally, I am ecstatic about what's going on right now at the halftime. Auburn Tigers 21, Florida State 10. War Eagle to all my people across the country and around the world. We're making it happen so far.
You know, this has another issue of SEC and then all the rest. And this is right now, at least for the first half, showing again that the SEC may very well be supreme.
Yes, and this is what I've been talking about, and this is what I talked with David Massey about the Pac-12 about a month ago when we were talking. The SEC is the supreme conference, bar none. And when you watch Florida State and what they've done to the teams that they've played this year to where they beat them, I believe, Sean, on an average of 40 points per game, just utter dominance through the ACC and the teams that they played. But the key is that they haven't played an SEC team. And when it comes down to it, that is the biggest and the best conference. Alabama was to be the number one team all year long, and the Auburn Tigers have come up and shown that there's another team in Alabama. And unfortunately for the rest of the country, Sean Wally, if the Auburn Tigers can hold on to this one, this will be 4 years in a row of dominance from an Alabama team, two shared championships by the Alabama Crimson Tide and two by the Auburn Tigers.
Definite a great thing for the Auburn Tigers and the SEC in general, and just great things going on in the state of Alabama in college athletics.
Then who would have thought that this would be the mecca of college football? But we've known this, and of course, there's a great big hire in the University of Texas, and Coach Young coming over from Louisville. But again, when you're talking about the supreme football conference, it is that of the SEC. Man, Nick Marshall is putting on a clinic so far, 7-13 for 113 yards in the first half. Winston Jameson, and you know, the Heisman Trophy winner for Florida State, have nothing against the young man. I think he's upstanding as far as winning that Heisman Trophy. But you know, when it comes to going head to head, Sean Wally, that young man has a lot of smiles. It looks like, you know, I know what the rest of the country was thinking when Cam Newton would walk around smiling, but I just wanted the Auburn Tigers to come out and wipe that smile off of his face. And sure enough, in the first half, they've done just that, 6-15 for 62 yards, and Jameson is searching for some type of consistency.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to note that he's the Heisman Trophy winner, and here he is on the biggest stage he's ever been on, and it's not going very well for him.
Well, you know, it's a complete effort by the Auburn Tigers so far. And again, it's only one half, but Trey Mason, the Heisman Trophy candidate this year in 2013, 18 carries, 96 yards, and is definitely, you know, putting his stamp on this ball game as well. But great things happening for the Auburn Tigers in the first half.
From what you've seen in the first half of the national championship game, what do you think will happen in the second half? Will Florida State be able to make enough adjustments to try and climb back into this, or will it continue the domination of Auburn?
Well, you hit the nail on the head once again, Sean Wally. Jimbo Fisher, this isn't his first rodeo. Of course, being in at this stage, you know, playing in this national championship before, excuse me, losing my words, so excited, but I believe that he will definitely make the adjustments coming out in the second half. It's just, what can Auburn do as far as, you know, keeping the intensity going? Can Nick Marshall continue and Trey Mason continue to put this pressure and not to take anything away? I it's the Auburn defense that's actually showing that, you know, hey, we're a force to be reckoned with also. It's not just two offensive teams going at it. We are, you know, this powerful force. And, you know, again, the Auburn defense is playing a great role as well.
And, of course, the game being played on a neutral field, so there isn't really one advantage from a fan perspective and a home field by any means in this game. Of course, in the bowl season, that's the way it works.
Yeah, and so they're playing in Pasadena, California, the Rose Bowl. It does seem like the sod is a little slippery. Both teams are having a hard time keeping, you know, keeping their tracks as far as, you know, running with the lateral movement. But, you know, I think, you know, both teams, again, will make those adjustments. Look for Auburn to play smash mouth power football and kind of take a little bit of the air out of the ball, if you will, in the second half to, you know, to maintain the consistency and time of possession.
Let's head on out to the phone lines now and welcome in Bob Stelton from 710 ESPN Seattle, co-host of Bob and Graz on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines. Bob, thanks so much for joining us here tonight.
You got it. What's happening, guys?
Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us on the show, man. It is a tremendous weekend in football. Of course, you know, we were just talking about the national championship game that's being played right now, and I'm sure that you have, you know, one eye on that as you're talking with us. But a great weekend in pro football as well. Of course, the Seattle Seahawks having a bye, looking to face the New Orleans Saints once again. And so, you know, what do you think about, you know, New Orleans coming into town this upcoming weekend?
Well, I think, you know, we got a bit of a preview in week 13 of what that matchup looks like. Now the difference is that the Saints are aware of what they're in store for. I mean, I think they have a sense of what the building is going to be like, what the noise level is going to be like. They earned a certain amount of confidence coming away with a road win this weekend. And, you know, I mean, the Saints are a good team. There's a weird sense of relief out of the fan base out here there, where everybody felt like, all right, great, we got the Saints. If that were the easiest matchup, I don't know that that's true. This is a very good defense. This is an explosive offense. The only other quarterback in the league to throw for over 5,000 yards in Drew Brees. So, yeah, it was a dominant, one-sided affair the first time. I think fans are foolish to think that's going to be exactly how this plays out once again.
Yeah, so a Pete Carroll football team is definitely prepared. You know, we've seen this in you know, the years prior, but you're right. I believe that the New Orleans Saints might have a little bit more emphasis and you know, make this an even game. One of the things that a Sean Payton, you know, led football team can do is we're talking about making adjustments early. Do you think that the New Orleans Saints can actually come in to, you know, CenturyLink Field and pull out a W?
I mean, I don't expect them to. Is it possible? Absolutely. As we saw in the first round of the playoff, anything is possible. And it's one and done, and there's a different intensity, and there's, you know, teams step up. Nobody expected the Packers to look anything close to what they look like, where they almost pulled off a win against the 49ers. And, you know, they were expected to be blown out. Everybody expected Cincinnati to win. They looked terrible. So anything's possible, but I don't anticipate it. I believe the Seahawks are a better team. I just don't expect it to be the blowout that it was where, you know, listen, they held them to under 200 yards of offense in that game. I mean, they absolutely stymied them. The Saints couldn't do a thing, and they're a timing precision offense. And once you disrupt their timing, that really throws them off. So now they understand what they're in store for. As I said, I think that's going to help the Saints. They get it now. They understand how physical this team is, and if they call the game anything close to what we saw yesterday or over the weekend in the NFL, they're letting a lot of that stuff go, which favors the Seahawks. But, you know, again, I just believe the Saints are educated now. You know, they know exactly what they're dealing with. They know exactly what it's like to play there on that field, that noise level. They've set the record that night for you know, the crowd noise. And, you know, I just expect a different performance from the Saints. I expect the Seahawks to win. I would be stunned if it were that one-sided or even close to that one-sided.
Bob, what do you think are a couple of X factors for the Seattle Seahawks in getting a victory here in the divisional round?
Well, I think they're going to get their offense rolling again. I mean, they started to get it in the second half against the Rams, but they are absolutely terrible against the Arizona Cardinals. That was the worst we'd seen Russell Wilson. The first half and into the third quarter against the Rams, they were still not sharp. The timing for the offense, over the past 4 weeks, it just hadn't even looked right. They had two games back-to-back where they had a total of 9 turnovers, and they did nothing with them. I mean, they shut out the Giants on the road. That's great. But they had 5 turnovers in that game. They scored a total of 23 points. It just they'd had the last time their offense was really clicking was against the Saints. I think that's huge. They've got to get the run game going. They've got to get some timing going with it with that passing game and get Russell Wilson looking the way he did against the Saints the first time. And then defensively, they've been on point. Their defense has been absolutely playing at a championship level over the past month, and they did a great job even in the loss against the 49ers and the loss against the Cardinals. Those were all on the offense. Those issues in those games were on the offense. So defensively, they're on point. They just need to keep doing what they're doing. Offensively, they've got to establish some level of rhythm with that passing game, and we'll see if Percy Harvin is in fact going to play. I think he can be huge to establishing a rhythm early.
And getting that offense going on Seattle's side, one guy who's almost disappeared in the last two games is Doug Baldwin. Only one catch for 8 yards in the previous two games. I think he had a big game December 2nd against the Saints. It would be good if they can find a way to get him rolling along with everybody else.
Yeah, they're all him, Golden Tate. All of those guys are crucial to what they do, you know, and there are certain elements of your offense that are going to be taken out depending on what the opposition wants to focus on. You throw a Percy Harvin into the mix, majority of that focus is going to go on him. So that's going to open up things for Baldwin and for Golden Tate. So, I mean, just his presence on the field is going to have an impact whether Percy, comes away with 5 catches or 1 catch. He is going to draw so much attention that I think you couldn't help but expect that receiving core is set for a big day. And the other part of it is the secondary for the New Orleans Saints is absolutely riddled with injuries. They're playing with guys you've never heard of coming into this game, and they've got a lot to be concerned about. Despite the fact that the offense for the Seahawks hasn't been clicking, they've got to feel like, man, we're on the road. We're going up against this team that throttled us before, and now we're doing it with guys that weren't drafted, guys off the street, guys that have very little experience playing in that secondary. That sets up very well for getting that passing game rolling. If I'm Russell Wilson, I'm pretty excited about the prospects of that same secondary.
Bob Stelton, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. You can catch Bob on 710 AM ESPN Seattle. Bob, there's been a sighting of the NFL, if you will. Roger Goodell kind of reaching his hand in the cookie jar again. What I mean by that, of course, is the fine to Marshawn Lynch for not talking to the media. What's new as far as Marshawn Lynch and his focus for this weekend's game?
Well, as far as the fine goes, that to me, that's much ado about nothing. That's not a new policy. Seattle fans want to show some level of outrage and feel like Marshawn is a victim. It's absolute nonsense. I mean, whether you agree it's a good rule or bad rule, that's a different conversation. But the idea that somehow he's a victim and, it's not fair and blah, what's surprising is it didn't happen earlier. This happens often. And the league did not know that he hadn't been speaking to the media for the entire season. So the fact that it took this long before they got wind of it is surprising. And that's the only surprising thing. So the whole Marshawn is a victim and the league's picking on him is such nonsense. And, fans just need to chill out on that. It's not unique to the Seahawks. Nobody's picking on Marshawn. The same rule applies to every other team. If Colin Kaepernick decided he wasn't going to speak, guess what? He's going to get fined, and we'd all love it out here in Seattle. We'd all think it's great, and, of course, that's how the rule should be. But because it happened to a Seahawk, everybody's outraged, and it's ridiculous.
And so for a media pundit such as yourself, I mean, it makes it a little difficult as far as, getting the questions answered. But as you're saying, I mean, it's no big deal, much ado about nothing. I was just wondering, what the sentiment was, between the media and Marshawn. Is it something that, again, is no big deal between the media and Marshawn, or just a no big deal with Marshawn Lynch?
It's just, I think national media, I think, is a little more, I won't say taken aback, but, often they're not exposed to him week in, week out. So they, they'll request and he doesn't oblige. And, we've learned not to even approach him. I walk into that locker room after every single home game. I'm at every game. I don't even see him in there. So I don't know you know, he dresses, he gets out of the way early, so he's not even in a position to say no. You've just gotten used to the fact that he's just not there. He's not going to talk. I mean, it's just sort of what the local media has accepted, and you know, okay, you don't want to talk, don't talk. That's fine. It does, you know, I guess for beat reporters that are there every single practice, day in, day out, that travel with the team, perhaps it's a different issue. For me, you know, I'm out there every week. I'm at every home game. I don't travel with the team, but you know, if he doesn't want to talk, I don't want to talk to him. I mean, those aren't great interviews. Guys that don't want to talk don't make great interviews, frankly. So if he doesn't want to speak, that's fine with me. And you know, I'd prefer to speak to the guys that have something to say, because I tell you what, there are a few other guys on that team that do speak now and again that I would prefer would take the same tack as Marshawn Lynch and decide they're not going to speak.
Great point. Great point.
Bob Stelton joining us from 710sports.com, co-host of Bob and Graz, 710 ESPN Seattle. And Bob, getting into this contest here, who do you think has the coaching advantage? It's really tough to call in my mind. You've got Pete Carroll, who's done great things at every level, college and the NFL. Sean Payton has done phenomenal things, you know, all over his NFL career in coaching the Saints. Do you give an advantage to one team or the other, or is it pretty even down the middle?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the capacity as a head coach, man, it's hard to take anything away from Sean Payton. He's got a Super Bowl title under his belt. Pete doesn't. The one matchup between these two guys this year, Pete came out way on top, and the Saints were much healthier than they are now. So does that speak to him being a better coach? Not necessarily. I just think the Seahawks are a better team. The Seahawks have the advantage. They're at home. This is what they played for. This is what they wanted all year. They've got the most decisive home field advantage in all of the NFL, and they've got home field advantage throughout the entire playoffs and until the Super Bowl, should they get that far. So as far as an X's and O's guy, I mean, it's tough to say one is better than the other. You know, Sean Payton, you see his impact. You see what the Saints were without him when he served that suspension. You see who they are with him. He's a phenomenal head coach. I'm a big fan of Sean Payton. I love Pete Carroll. I think he's a guy that's got a very unique way of dealing with players, and it works. I mean, he does things that a lot of coaches won't do. He's unorthodox. He's the ultimate optimist, and he's got the right people around him. So he does a phenomenal job himself. So I would call it a push, you know, if you're going to ask which coach has an advantage. But Pete has the advantage of being at home, being in familiar territory, and having this fan base that is absolutely bananas there. That's a decided advantage.
Bob, how big of a letdown will it be if the Seahawks actually lose again at CenturyLink for the second time in three games?
Oh, my goodness. Man, this city would be on red alert suicide watch. I mean, the expectation from this fan base is that it's Super Bowl or bust. Anything short of that is going to be looked at as a failure. It's going to be looked at as you came up short, especially you get home field advantage, you get the bye the first week, and you come out and lose in the first game. That would be a failure. I don't care about 13 wins on the season. I don't care about home field advantage. You go out and you gack it in the first game of the season, that would be considered a massive choke job. And I can't even guess what this city would be like, because this city is just so ingrained and so consumed with the Seahawks. Everybody's identity is tied up into the success and failure of this team. If somebody were to suggest, and when they suggest in the national media, that the Seahawks may not be the best team in the league, people out here lose their minds. They want the name and number of the person that said it, and they want retribution. How dare you think anything other than the Seahawks are the best? So if they were to go out there and lose the first game of the playoffs, I it would be a state of shock. This city might go into shutdown. I can't even imagine the reaction.
Bob Stelton, kind enough to join us on the double with the Double S Express. Hey, Bob, just a question aside from the Seahawks, the Cincinnati Bengals, actually, it'll kind of correlate if the Seahawks don't wind up winning, which I see them winning this weekend. Cincinnati, you have Marvin Lewis. Coach has been there for about 11 years. Team's gone through ups and downs with mediocrity. The playoffs come about. It seems like, you know, it's their chance to come out there and win a football game, and they don't. They wind up just crumbling. And, you know, you can imagine the city of Seattle, as you were saying, if that were to happen. Look at Cincinnati right now. It just seems like they're upside down, almost couldn't sell out the game. where do you see Marvin Lewis here in the next? Do you see him on the hot seat right now?
You know, I feel like we talk about Marvin Lewis every year, whether he's on the hot seat. Man, he's had so much success with a bad franchise. I mean, before he got there, they were the joke of the league. I mean, they hadn't had success since Boomer Esiason was a quarterback back in the 80s. I mean, they're just a downtrodden franchise with poor ownership who put nothing into the team, and he turned them into a winning product, and they've gotten to the playoffs. Now they've had zero success. There's no debating their track record in the postseason has been atrocious. You know, it's hard to say when you watch that game yesterday, how much of it do you put on him? How much of it do you put on Andy Dalton? How much of it do you put on just horrible timing with crucial mistakes? I'm talking about Giovanni Bernard fumbling where he did, when he did. He also dropped a pass. A.J. Green had a ball in his hands that should have turned into a touchdown.
Man, that was crazy.
I mean, it's just, you know, so it's easy to simplify it and just go, well, the head coach can't get it done, or, well, Andy Dalton can't get it done. You know, it's kind of a collection of all of it. You know, it takes more than one person to blow this thing, and there are coaching decisions that happen that you sort of scratch your head. There are passes made by Dalton, you scratch your head. But it's a collective, man. There was a lot of failure on that field, and, boy, an 11-win team, they hadn't lost at home all year. And for them to go out there and play the way they did is just, if I'm a Bengals fan, you know, I'm a little sideways. I don't know that I put it all on Marvin Lewis, though. He's a guy that's gotten the best out of what he's been dealt over the years, and now he's got a really talented team. They got a lot of weapons on that team moving forward. I would say I don't expect him to be fired, but I would say next year is kind of a do-or-die year for him, without question.
Bob, you've been in the sports broadcasting business for a long time. Is this the best time of the sports year with bowl games, NFL playoffs, and the like?
Yeah, for me it is. But the funny thing is I look forward to all the seasons. Like, you know, by the time this is done and we get ready for baseball, I start going, man, there's nothing better than baseball, isn't it? You know, I start falling into the routine of whatever season's coming up because, you know, the beginning holds such promise. You get excited about the potential of what's right around the corner. So once, you know, May gets here, April and May, and you're the beginning of the baseball season, and out here in Seattle, we'll be watching Robinson Cano in a Mariners uniform, and there'll be some level of optimism about this team before the wheels come off eventually. But, you know, I mean, it's just, I'm an NFL fan first, I guess, but I love all the other sports almost as much. So I get pretty excited about any time of year, but yeah, I mean, you're talking national title game as we speak is happening. You've got the bowl games all in the bag. If you're an NBA fan, that's going on right now. And then, of course, you know, everybody's making that push toward the Super Bowl, and it doesn't get any more exciting than that for me.
That's the voice of Bob Stelton. Catch him weekdays, noon to 3 in Seattle with Bob and Graz on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. And we can't forget the great 710 Sports app on your smartphone. Bob, thanks so much for your time and taking time away from the national championship game. We appreciate your insight.
Hey, anytime, thanks, guys. Just give me a call.
Bob Stelton of the Bob and Graz Show. Man, you know what? I really love that Bob and Graz Show. I forgot to mention to Bob that, you know, I liked it a lot better than Graz with Gas years ago on the other station. But great to have him on the show. So we will take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more to talk about. We'll talk NFL. We'll talk college. Of course, the second half is getting ready to start in the national championship. And also on this show, you're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the brush flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show 34, but show number one here in 2014. And let's waste no time. Go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Lamont Brightful, former Eastern Eagle, former cornerback and kick returner in the NFL and CFL. Lamont, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me again.
Hey, Lamont, hey, it's always a pleasure having you on the show, man. And, of course, Sean Wally just mentioning your ties to Eastern Washington and paying the dues. Man, it was a tough season for our Eagles this year. Man, Towson comes into town. And it looked like, well, you know, we had a victory, but, you know, it just slipped through our hands at the end of the game. Tried to have a goal line stance and, you know, Towson punches it in.
Yes, it was a tough game. I mean, our guys so resilient all the way through. You know it's going to be a ball game. You know Eastern's always a second-half team. One of those things, I just talked to a couple of guys that we, you know, sometimes we dig ourselves in the hole a little bit, but because I think we have a little bit of that confidence in us that we know we can always come back. So if we can tweak a couple of little things, I think we'll be good for a long time, and I'm proud of that program. I love going back and seeing all the things that they're doing there, and I plan on going back again this summer and checking out hopefully this game coming up on August 23rd, being on ESPN. So they're moving up. There's a lot of good things going on at Eastern, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
Yes, and so, yeah, you'd mentioned the young talent. Of course, there's one that I'm thinking about in particular. Cooper Krupp, I believe he's a freshman. He'll be a sophomore next year, of course. Excellent wide receiver, wins the Jerry Rice Award, a prestigious honor, not just for a football player, but a freshman getting that award. That says a lot for Eastern Washington and the talent that they have coming up.
Oh, yes, it does. I mean, anytime you have guys involved in awards, that's going to bring attention. That next year, you're going to have people in the other conferences looking at, oh, who's this guy from Eastern? And then that brings attention to the Big Sky, which always is a good thing overall. So, I mean, everything is great for a Cup. I'm happy for him. I'm glad for the Eastern itself and all the accolades that it brings, not only to himself for the hard work that he puts in, but also brings attention also to other guys, you know, has scouts and other people looking at the team and noticing other talent that's on the team too. Also, you know, it spreads everything, it spreads the wealth around.
So, of course, Lamont, shifting gears a little bit, of course, we moved to the NCAA Division 1A. Of course, Eastern Washington being Division 1 AA, having a great playoff structure going on. Right now, the national championship, this is the last year of the current structure of Division 1A. They're going to be going to the playoff structure. Is this something that's long overdue for Division 1A?
Oh, yes. I mean, of course. I mean, we understand if you dig deeper than, you know, you have the normal fans that just look into the actual game of it. But you look deeper into the, you know, if there is politics in certain things, and we understand that. But they're finally getting their act together a little bit. They're introducing the four-man playoff system next year, which, you know, I think will eventually get a little bit bigger than that, you know, at least eight. But I'm glad to see a change because there's a lot of college students that put in the hard work all off season, and then to pretty much every season to come in and say that, you know, no matter how hard you work, you won't have a chance to play for a national championship in it, and that's not right, you know. So I believe they're working in the right direction, and everything's coming along. So I'm glad to see that, and also I'm looking forward to hopefully maybe one day, you know, seeing Eastern join that next level, and then eventually maybe, you know, when my son gets a little older, they'll be playing for a national championship. That'll be a good story to tell.
That's the voice of Lamont Brightful, former Eastern Eagle and NFL and CFL cornerback and kick returner. And Lamont, I know you're a big sports fan. I know you got your eye on the title game that Sean Boyd was mentioning. What do you think of what's been going on so far with Auburn dominating the first half?
It's interesting. I mean, it's a little hard to tell. I always go into it, and everybody asks me sometimes, you know, about the bowl games and everything. It's a little hard to tell. You guys get a lot of time off. You know, a big thing in the NFL is, you know, you go about the hot teams going into the playoffs, not necessarily the dominant team throughout the whole year, not necessarily the dominant team in the first half of the season or second half. It's those hot teams coming in. And again, you know, you have those hot teams, just like in college, guys get better, they learn the system, and then you have that big break coming up for the bowl game, so it's kind of hard to see where guys are at. They often change coaches and coordinators during that time. They don't come to them within the bowl game, so it's hard to tell exactly where they're at. So I believe a lot of people thought Florida State was coming in and going to come in there and dominate at first. But you can tell, you know, from the time off, you know, you never can tell. But I'm thinking Florida State's going to go to make a move coming here in the second half and let the game settle down a little bit and get back into it. But it's still an excellent game. It's good to see the different contrasts of the SEC and the ACC. And it's an interesting game so far.
What are your thoughts on the SEC? Do you feel like Sean Boyd does, and a lot of our listeners and some of our big-time guests feel that the SEC is the most dominant in big-time college football?
You know, it's a double-edged sword. It's a two-sided coin on that, I believe. I believe that through and day in and week out, as far as consistent level of competition, yes, it's one of the best, and they prove it every year. You know, the past 7 years, who has won the national championship? It's been the SEC team. And again, when you're playing the best week in and week out, you know, you're coming in, you're playing at that high level. Not saying that there isn't talent in other leagues, which, you know, you have the ACC, which is, you know, talented. You have the Pac-12, formerly Pac-10, which is talented, but you know, that talent runs in as you get, you know, toward the tier team, to the lower tier teams. You know, you have your top three, four teams in those leagues, in the ACC and in the Pac-10, Pac-12 now, that are dominant in the spread thin. But in the SEC, they have talent that runs through all the way through from the bottom to the top. Even though you might have some teams in the bottom, like you had Tennessee this year and things like that, but every game you got to come in and they're going to play you hard. And I believe for those teams in the SEC, I believe it's just the coaching part of it. So, you know, you have Saban at Alabama. You have these guys that, you know, they have another level as far as coaching that's taking these taking Alabama and these guys to another level. So that's my opinion on the SEC and how they're dominant in college football right now.
Lamont Brightful, kind enough to join us on the Double with the Double S Express. And yes, Lamont, I have to agree with you. I mean, you know, when you're playing tough teams week in and week out, such as the SEC, it makes, you know, it beefs up their confidence a little bit. And you know, they have a big swagger as the season goes on. Shifting gears, you know, there were some great games yesterday in the NFL. And, of course, there was – you know, no surprise, you know, with the close games, you know, between New Orleans and Philadelphia, and, you know, but which was more surprising to you, the Indianapolis-Kansas City game or the San Diego-Cincinnati Bengals game?
It's funny that you asked that, because I had a little, you know, a little pool going, and I actually did pick three out of the four games. I ended up picking Indianapolis to beat Kansas City because, even though Kansas City was dominant during the year, you know, Indianapolis was there last year. You know, they're a different team at home. you know, Andrew Luck, you know, he's a different type of guy. You know, he's a guy that you just feel confident in him. And, you know, they're at home and they had a chance, you know, and also the Kansas City had a lot of, you know, injuries going in. Also, I picked the New Orleans. I picked New Orleans going to beat Philly for the fact that, you know, Breeze has been there. And I think they had a little chip on their shoulder as far as the outdoors thing going on, the cold weather and things like that, even though I think Seattle's going to go in and give them a great game, and I think Seattle's going to go on to the next. So everybody here over in Seattle, I got the Seahawks winning this next game, so don't worry about that. The game that did surprise me, I did pick Cincinnati to go ahead and beat San Diego, even though San Diego's fit in that mold this year as Baltimore last year and other teams are coming in at, in wild card spots, and they've just been hot of lately. So watch out for them, you know, Cincinnati, I thought, because they're at home. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on with the Dalton situation, and, you know, you just don't know yet. So that was surprising to me. So, I mean, it's been a great game. That's why I love the wild card weekend. It's great. You got a lot of teams, a couple of teams playing in that weekend that, you know, might not have been there, shouldn't have been there, you know, as the media and everybody says. But you got to play the game. And, of course, San Francisco, you know, they went in a hard-fought game. Some people might have thought they should have went in and dominated, or maybe they people thought Green Bay should have went in and got the home field advantage. But there's another team there, too. You got to watch out for them because, you know, they've been there before. And, you know, those wild-card spots, you know, a lot of times those Super Bowl teams come out of those wild-card teams. So it's interesting every year. I love to see different different teams in the playoffs every year. And I'm looking forward to this next weekend coming up.
Lamont, one of the, you know, games that you just mentioned, the San Francisco Green Bay game, an excellent hard-fought game by both teams. One of the misconceptions that is given to, you know, from the media to their listeners, and maybe you can, you know, correct this, is the fact that a team being from a certain part of the country can't go into another part of the country where the, you know, the temperatures are extreme and actually pull out a ball game. Of course, you getting a chance to play in Eastern Washington where it's super hot one part of the year and then ice cold the next part. Does that really play a factor when two teams are getting ready to battle?
Again, I believe on the lower scale as far as in college, I believe in college and down below, amateur and everything down below, some of those things play a part as far as more as home field and everything. Even though there's a couple teams in the NFL you see that they play better at home as far as dome and stuff like that. But I believe that just fits their schemes better. They have a lot more spread out. New Orleans, Indianapolis, they have a lot of spread out offense and they like to dink and dunk and get their guys out and make moves. And you can do that in on the turf and things like that. But that's just my little piece on that. But going back into college, and down on, I think, you know, home field advantage and weather and things like that and things play a factor for the fact that, you know, guys are a little bit more younger and you have a whole group of guys come on, oh, it's cold, and it affects the whole locker room. It's cold, and they go out there, and you just can't never recover. Kind of like, you know, you have the leadoff man in baseball, he strikes out. Mm-hmm. Second batter comes up, he strikes out. And it's just, it gets addicted. Everybody else, you know, keeps striking out. Not saying that nobody can't hit that pitcher, but it's a mental thing. But I believe in the NFL, you have guys that are in the locker room that come from so many different parts. That's been in cold weather, they've been in warm weather, but they come to the realization that, you know, it's a business. They need to do what they need to do. Now, again, things do take over, you know. The balls change in weather, you know, it gets wet, it gets cold, things like that, but I believe it's more of a mental thing going on from college down lower rather than in the upper leagues as far as in the NFL and Major League Baseball and professional sports like that.
So at a professional level, how big was a win like that for San Francisco to go into Green Bay and pull out that victory?
Oh, I mean, it's real big. I mean, you're a team that you're coming into the season with high expectations. You're coming in thinking, hey, we're going to win this conference. We're going to get back on that path again. Things didn't work out the way they probably thought they would. You know, they probably thought they were going to win the conference. That didn't happen. Okay, so they went on to the next. They made the playoffs. and they had to go on to the road, even though they probably felt. And that's another personal thing. I believe I'll bring that up, but that's for another show. We can do that as far as, you know, them being 11-4 and going and playing a 10-8-7, whether they won their conference or not. But that's a whole other topic. But either way, they feel they had a chip on their shoulder. They had to go over here. They had to go to Green Bay. And again, though, the elements was up in the toss. Again, I don't believe they really thought about it as much, but if it's out there, you know, the media brings it up, they talk about it, you got to talk about it. Whatever you talk about it, and you go on. But, and again, you never know. You have to play the game. You go to a hostile environment. You know, you have the atmosphere. You have the weather going on. You have the media talking about the weather. And you go there, and people don't realize that it, even in the regular season, the team, you can go play a team that's 1-5 or a team that's 2-12. Or you have to play the game. And guys are out there playing for that next contract. Guys are out there playing for a chance to make the team the next year or make another team. So you have to go out there and perform. And especially when it comes to the playoffs, people believe that, you know, when you get in that playoff, you never know what happens. So you have to come out there with your A game every single time.
Lamont Breifel joining us. Lamont, you were a 2002 draft pick of the Baltimore Ravens. What was that second day of the draft like for you, and how did that not only change your life, but how did that affect, you know, you were a college kid playing football, and all of a sudden you're going to the pros?
I mean, the first day, I mean, you have a lot of emotion going on. You're thinking, do I have a chance? Will I, you know, everything's going. You have people around you, friends, family, you know, the energy's high. And, you know, you just want a chance. After everything happens, you're just, it's like, you know, what's next? You know, you're just like, you know, it's kind of like the first day of school when you go to the next level, you know, when it's first day of elementary or the first day of middle school, first day of high school. You've been doing it all your life. You've been going to school, you know, you've been going to, you went, besides, you know, elementary, you go, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, you know, it's nothing new. It's school, you know, you go there, you learn. But middle school, you go to sixth grade, it's something new. It's something new. You don't know what to expect. So, you know, you go back to that little kid stage again, you don't know what's next, everything's new. But, you know, once you go out there and practice, you get on the field, and you realize it's just football. Now, again, circumstances, things happen, you know, injuries, you know, life things happen. But as far as just the football aspect of it, you know, you go out there and you play ball. But it's a great experience. You go out there, it's a dream. You know, everybody strives to be the best at what they, you know, whatever they do. And for you to get a chance to be in that position and showcase your talents, it was a great experience.
Now, before we let you run, let's get you on the record here. We've got four divisional games. We'll get your thoughts on them, who you think will win. New Orleans at Seattle, the first game on Saturday. Where are you going there?
Like I said earlier, everybody got me going. I'm Seattle. I believe that defense is tough. I hope somebody is listening right now. I hope they're, you know, they learn everything that you got to come out there just because you beat them before. You got to come out there. They're going to come out tough. They got another chip on their shoulder, but I believe that they're hungry. They tasted a little bit last year, and they're going to come out there tough. And I think Russell's going to go out there and minimize the mistakes, and the defense is going to take the energy of that crowd and bring it to them.
Okay, game number two Saturday night, the Colts at the Patriots.
You know what? I'm riding with the Colts. I mean, anything's possible with Tom Brady. Don't get me wrong. He's done it. You know, he's been in the league for a while. He's done it, and anything's possible if you keep him around. But we know this isn't the same New England team that has been back in the day. So, if the game is close, anything's bound to happen. If the game is close, of course I trust Brady. But I believe that, you know, Indianapolis is going in, playing with the house money. They have nothing to lose. Nobody's going to expect them to go up there and win. And they're going to go up there and give them a good game. So I'm picking Indianapolis for that game.
All right. And the first game on Sunday is the 49ers traveling to Carolina to take on the Panthers.
Now, this is the only one I've been talking to myself about a little bit, and it's been tough. I mean, they played each other, you know, in the regular season. Different circumstances now. But I mean, you got two teams that are grind out teams. I believe that team that makes the less mistakes. Now again, that's cliche. They say that all the time, but not necessarily. Indianapolis, Andrew Luck made a lot of mistakes last week. The interceptions, but they kept the game close. So anything can happen. I'm picking 49ers for the fact that they've been here last year. They know what it takes. Carolina, I'm proud of them. I like Cam Newton. I like, their type of mentality, their team. I like that type of team where their defense, their grind out, they do what they need to do on offense. I think that Carolina's going to give them a good game, but I believe that, just the experience of the 49ers is going to take over, and I think Carolina might just be a little bit immature as far as, being in the playoffs and knowing what's going to go on. So I'm picking San Francisco to win this game.
And the final divisional game of the weekend is San Diego returning to Denver, a place they won earlier in the year.
Now, again, I'm going back a little bit on my remarks as far as watch out for that dangerous team that's hot. And San Diego's that team. I'm going with Denver, though. But the reason why I'm going with them is because San Diego beat them earlier this year. They beat them. San Diego beat them earlier this year. So I think they got that a little bit on their mind. So I'm going to go with that. Again, if the game stays close, anything's possible. Again, San Diego hurts a lot of teams with that, with their clock management. They hold on to the ball, but they're very efficient, and people don't realize that. They keep their. That's what happened with Peyton Manning earlier this year. They kept the ball out of his hands. So if they're able to do that, it'll be interesting. But I believe Denver has a lot to prove. Peyton's got a lot, even though he's been the man in the regular season. He doesn't really have anything to prove, but he does at the same time, if you get what I'm saying on that, with the outdoor thing, the cold thing and all that. And again, they beat him not too recently. So Peyton, he looks like he's a perfectionist, and he's going to want to get after him. So I believe they'll rally and going to take this game.
That's the voice of Lamont Brightfull. Thank you so much for your insight on the college and NFL game, what you experienced at Eastern Washington, and also playing in the National Football League. And if you're like many this time of year that have a New Year's resolution to get healthy, exercise, lose some weight, and you want to learn from a former NFL player, Lamont Brightfull, and you're in the Tri-Cities area, Richland, Washington, to be exact, check him out at CBRC, Columbia Basin Racquet Club, mycbrc.com, and Lamont will set you straight with cardio, weights, and get you in shape for 2014. Thanks for your time tonight, Lamont.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and look forward to being on again and talking about all kinds of things. Thank you.
There goes Lamont Brightfull, big-time guest number two on the show. And we'll be back right after this to wrap up the show, the first one of 2014. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images, Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images, Barbershop and Styles.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd as we close out our first show of 2014.
Yeah, and a great show it is, Sean Wally. I mean, you know, we had Bob Stelton on from the Bob and Graz Show, 710 Cairo, ESPN in Seattle. Of course, Lamont Breitfeld on. Always a pleasure having him on as a guest and getting the NFL, the college prospectus. And, yeah, you're right. First show is a great one to kick off the new year.
And as we have been talking about most of the show, the national championship game in college football going on. What kind of score do we have now? The first half when we started the show, it was all Auburn, Sean. How are we looking now?
Well, you know, Florida State is trying to make a charge here. It was 21-10 going into the halftime. Of course, Florida State getting a late touchdown. It is now 21-13 with Florida State with the ball once again. But the Auburn defense looks like just got a sack on Jameson Winston. And so it's three and out for the Florida State Seminoles, and Auburn will get the football back.
And, of course, the big divisional playoffs coming up this weekend. We gave Lamont Breitfeld a chance to give us his predictions, and hopefully he does better than I did this past weekend, is I didn't get one game right.
Well, you know, we had a caller on last week. We had Pat on, and, you know, he was very quick to point out that he had a 3-1 weekend. And, man, we didn't have a good weekend at all. My, you know, my saving grace was picking San Francisco over Green Bay. And let's hope that this week we can have a better week picking.
Well, definitely. And of course, as a leading charge member of the 12th man, as long as I get the Seattle game correct and they move on, I'll be a happy camper.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that I wanted to mention. You and Pat both picked Green Bay over San Francisco. And, you know, both of you being Seahawk fans, I think that was kind of wishful thinking on your parts. But, yeah, we'll stick with the Seahawk predictions alone, and I think that you'll be okay.
Did you notice, Sean, how the irony played out in that Green Bay-San Francisco matchup at the end, how very similar it was to the game that you and I worked together at Candlestick Park, the final regular season day game for the 49ers at Candlestick Park, Seattle at San Francisco, came down to the very end with a third down, needing to stop the 49ers. The Seahawks couldn't do it. Kaepernick ran the ball for one more yard on 3rd and 7. And then you had the same scenario, third down late in the game. Green Bay needs the stop for an extremely long field goal in that bitter, bitter cold. And Kaepernick, again, runs for about 15 yards, moves the chains.
You know, I tell you what, you know, a lot has been said about Colin Kaepernick over the year. And, of course, you know, with the successes of Alex Smith over in Kansas City, there's been stark comparisons as far as, man, you know, should have San Francisco made that move, you know, because Alex was doing so great. But you got to hand it to Colin Kaepernick. You have to hand it to him for this reason. He's gone through a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, similar to Seattle with the injuries at the receiver position, Colin has maintained his composure as far as being a pocket quarterback. And I was so glad to actually see, and I can't believe that I'm so glad to see anything from a San Francisco 49er perspective, but I was so glad to see that Colin went back to his natural instincts as far as just playing the game. And when he plays the game, and what I mean by that is Colin, when he didn't see the proper reads, he knew the alleys to go through and run the football up the field. And that saved San Francisco, especially in the cold, bitter weather that the 49ers experienced against the Green Bay Packers.
And it's going to be a great matchup in Carolina with the 49ers visiting Kaepernick against Cam Newton.
Well, you know, there are a lot of comparisons between Seattle and San Francisco. You talk about the defenses that both teams have, and then you talk about the offenses that both put together as well. But I think that there's more of a comparison between Carolina and San Francisco than there is Seattle. And here's the reason why. For one, you have two athletic quarterbacks, one in Colin Kaepernick, of course, and Cam Newton. And it's almost like they're mirroring themselves or like playing against each other in practice. And, you know, you have two stellar defenses. Of course, Carolina has a very stout defense. They played San Francisco well, and they've also played against Seattle well as far as not giving up points. So I think this is going to be a great, great matchup this weekend. The first matchup between Carolina and San Francisco, it was 10-9 in favor of Carolina. Of course, San Francisco jumping out to 9-0 with three field goals in the beginning. But a D'Angelo Williams touchdown actually put the Carolina Panthers over the top. This week, I look for the San Francisco 49ers just to go down there and take care of business. And, you know, they wind up winning this game probably 21-10.
Sean, before we get to a caller on the line, I want to know the million-dollar answer to this million-dollar question. In the AFC, are we going to see a Manning-Brady Bowl in the AFC Championship?
Well, you know, as I had mentioned before, you know, Lamont kind of, you know, hinted to this, even though he's picking the Denver Broncos, you have to watch out for the San Diego Chargers. And who knew, you know, that San Diego would actually come out and take care of business like that? Of course, one caller that we had last week, Pat, had mentioned that. And I do think that the San Diego Chargers are, you know, are a team that's on fire right now. They've won 5 in a row. They're clicking at the right time. And, you know, it would only be fitting that the San Diego Chargers wind up being the team coming out of the AFC West when all of the pundits said that the Denver Broncos, hands down, were going to win this one. And, you know, here San Diego is with an opportunity to create an upset, and I believe they're going to come out and play that way this weekend.
Well, speaking of Patrick, who last week predicted the games, our caller from Tacoma, he is back on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines, and we can only wonder what Patrick wants to say.
Pat, what's going on, man?
Hi, guys. Oh, man. I always seem to get in at the last minute, and I'm glad you guys are still on the air. Because I was wondering if you guys had missed me. I have some of that good. You want some of that good juice that I was sipping on last week? It was apple cider. It was very good. I make sure I was able to have some for this week as well.
Well, you know, Pat,
3 out of 4 is not bad.
Pat, I think that I definitely need the recipe from you. And next time I'm over in the Tacoma area, I'll have to definitely come share whatever that may be, because you were right on last weekend.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man. Now the scores was kind of off there. Yeah, I admit some of the games, but the wins is what all that mattered. And we can be fair to say that Green Bay San Fran game could have went either way. So, you know,
hold on just a second, because the Green Bay San Francisco. It's funny you mentioned that. Because the Green Bay San Francisco game could have went either way, just like the other games could have gone either way. So, yeah, I do agree with you on that. There were 3 out of the 4 close games, but like you said, a win is a win. I happen to know for a fact that between the two of you, out of all the games that Pat got right, the one that he wanted to get right, he didn't. And that one, I want to talk about that since Pat calls in and wants to let us know that he won 3 out of the 4 games. Being a Seahawks fan, the both of you, I have had the chance to listen, because being in Northern California, listen to San Francisco 49ers fans and Seahawks fans alike. Out of all the games that were played this weekend, I couldn't help but wonder why the Seahawks fans were so adamant about Aaron, that bad man Rodgers, winning over the San Francisco 49ers. Maybe the both of you can explain that one to me.
Well, you know, at the most part, you know, have represented it as well, but since Seattle sits in the forefront and they sit in the driver's seat, pretty much it doesn't matter who they bring. But, of course, we would rather see based on matchups. And if San Francisco comes, it's going to be a different story. Anybody that comes in there is going to be a different story. It doesn't matter. The 12th man is ready. They're primed, they're destined to win. And this is their time. This is just their time, and they're equipped to get there a couple of times. So, you know, based upon the chemistry and everything that goes right and how they, you know, balance their team during the offseason, these guys are equipped to make another run again. So this is their year for right now, guaranteed. So,
you know, Sean, I know where you're going with this because you've gone there off the air, and it has nothing to do with who we want or don't want to see in Seattle, because the opponent, as the players and the coaches in Seattle will tell you, the opponent doesn't dictate what we do. The opponent doesn't matter. If we execute, we being the Seahawks, if the Seahawks execute and they do what they're supposed to do on every given play, then 9 times out of 10, things are working in their favor. It's just the hatred the 12th man and Seattle has for the Jim Harbaugh, the Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49ers, the whiny fans that you've experienced over the years going to Candlestick, working for Fox and the various networks. And it's just the satisfaction of seeing them cry and whine and go home. Now, Seattle would like nothing better than to be the one to pound them into the ground again in Seattle, which they've done the last 2 times they've played here, including week 2 of this season. But it's just, you know, put your Raider cap on. You would love nothing better than to see the Chargers get blasted. You saw the Chiefs lose. That had to put a smile on your face as an NFC West foe. And if you see, okay, you've got 2 AFC West teams battling in the Chargers and the Chiefs, who would you rather lose? Probably, I'm guessing, the Chargers, because as far as I know, they're the more bitter rival.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, I did want Kansas City to win over the weekend, but that was for, you know, just for other week, you know, reasons. And I did pick Kansas City to win. I thought that, you know, from a standpoint, Alex Smith, I thought he had a raw deal in San Francisco. So I felt like Alex Smith should have had the chance to take his team, you know, a little bit further into the playoffs. But you're right. I mean, as far as the divisional foes are concerned, you know, I probably would like to see them lose more so than not, but then again, I pick Kansas City. This upcoming game, it's a push because there's no way in the world I have to pick one team this weekend, and this weekend I'm picking the San Diego Chargers. I'm picking the San Diego Chargers for the reason that, for what Pat said last week, because, you know, these guys are riding a hot hand. They're winners of 5 in a row. And, you know, the things that they should have done in years past, I think they're finally starting to click for some reason right now. And wouldn't it be something if the San Diego Chargers were the team winding up being coming out of the AFC West when the Denver Broncos were supposed to be the team that was supposed to win it? And, you know, so, yeah, I've heard enough of the Seattle fans for some reason wanting Aaron Rodgers. It was more than just San Francisco losing. It was the rooting for Aaron Rodgers. It was the, you know, just the out and out. And now I want the Seattle fans to understand this, because for a while it did seem like Seattle was taking the high road. But for this past week, it sure did seem like, you know, a lot of the whining was coming from the Seattle fan base. And so, you know, I think that the reason why Seattle dislikes San Francisco and San Francisco dislikes Seattle so much is because the two franchises are so much alike. I hear the talk of Jim Harbaugh being irritating and Colin Kaepernick being irritating as much as Pete Carroll and you know, Russell Wilson. And so, you know, I think that both go hand in hand. I think that if both of these teams met in the NFC Championship game, that it would be a lot different than it was in the years prior, because for one, and this is the main reason, Seattle has taken advantage of San Francisco 2 years in a row by, you know, playing that one game up at CenturyLink Field in contrast to having a team coming back. And we'll see how Seattle plays this weekend against New Orleans. I think Seattle will actually beat New Orleans. But to have a team come back with the understanding in the same season that this isn't going to happen to us twice, and you have a team that is as tough as the San Francisco 49ers, I think that Seattle fan base is a little nervous of what might happen as far as the NFC West or the NFC Championship game.
All I have to say is, going back to your Aaron Rodgers questions, he's the better field general. He's the better quarterback. And, you know, if it weren't for, you know, any given Sunday and the ball bounced right for the Niners one or two more times than it did for the Packers. Talent for talent, the Niners have a better team.
But definitely, most definitely.
You take the fact that it was in Green Bay, the atrociously freezing temperatures. Aaron Rodgers has come back after breaking his collarbone. Randall Cobb's healthy, which they didn't get him the ball enough yesterday.
And, right.
And, you know, it came down to basically, at least in terms of the game-winning field goal, it came down to that late third down run that Kaepernick had, and you have to know. You have to have a spy. You have to have somebody watching out for the quarterback. And there he goes for a 15-yard run. And instead of a 50-plus yard field goal, which the chances of making that in negative one, you know, before the wind chill are slim to none.
Yeah, there's no way that the place kicker would have made that one from 48 yards. You know, Colin Kaepernick knew what he had to do. And that's what makes that team, you know, so dangerous. You know, is that, you know, you have Colin Kaepernick that can actually step up into that pocket and take off and fly. I think yesterday was perfect for him. You know, I talked to, and Pat, maybe you can answer this also. I talked about earlier about, you know, the weather situation. Colin Kaepernick answered that one real easy. He says, well, hey, I played in Nevada. And, you know, people tend to forget that. When you're talking about a Northern California team, they're just a Northern California team. But the players don't necessarily come from Northern California. And so, you know, when you think about, you know, where Colin Kaepernick has played, weather is not an issue. And for most of those players, weather isn't an issue. And so I just think that, you know, it was just much ado about nothing.
Well, in most cases, I mean, you know, like I said, and you know, for most people who have that experience, and I'm pretty sure Colin Kaepernick says the same thing. This is after Drew Brees played in Philadelphia, as cold as it was out there. They both said it, Sean Payton as well. They said, hey, Philadelphia is Philadelphia, but Seattle is Seattle. It's a totally different environment. So no matter what they did out there in Philadelphia, regardless of the weather, you know, the same thing as San Francisco is what they did out there in Green Bay and Lambeau with, you know, negative temperatures. They still got to come to an atmosphere that, you know, where the sound as well as the cold, as well as that moisture, it's a lot different. And it's hard for a lot of people to think when the 12th man is on their crank mode, which is a huge advantage, and which is why Seattle feeds off of that. And so for Colin Kaepernick to, you know, have that impressive game against Green Bay out in Lambeau, he's got to understand it's a different environment when it comes out here to Seattle. And New Orleans, it knows that as well.
So that's the voice of Pat, our guest caller, calling in, man. Hey, 3-4 for the weekend. I mean, I think that you probably have to call Vegas and put some money down, man, because
working on it. I'll have a good decision by Thursday. Sure.
Good deal. Well, hey, Pat, thanks for calling in, man.
Okay.
All right.
There goes Patrick from Tacoma on the holysmokenuts.com phone lines. He definitely took us to task last week in prognostication and picking the NFL playoffs. And
killed
he
us.
wanted to ring that bell here tonight.
Hey, yeah, killed us, man. I'm telling you, I got one pick right, and so, you know, maybe this week will be a lot better.
And I gotta love what he just said about the 12th man getting into, quote, crank mode, as Pat from Tacoma said.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it that 12th man up at CenturyLink plays a huge role. You got to wonder, as far as coaching and scouting is concerned, for the New Orleans Saints and possibly the San Francisco 49ers. Do they take a page or two from the Arizona Cardinals? Because obviously they went up there in a hostile environment and they tamed a wild beast. So it can be done. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with the New Orleans Saints and the San Francisco 49ers if they can get by this next weekend.
Sean, before we go, a scoring update for the College Football National Championship.
Well, this national championship game has definitely simmered down from the action in the first half. And right now, the Florida State Seminoles have the football marching down the field. Auburn's still leading 21-13, but Florida State moving fast into Auburn territory. Looks like first and goal at the 5. And this could be a tie game here in just a couple of minutes, 12 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter.
Sounds like quite a bit different from what we saw in the first half.
Yeah, both teams have kind of gone back and forth, you know, with Florida State actually showing a little bit more power in the second half. Neither have been able to score as much. Florida State with the only score in the second half thus far of 3 points. And it looks like they're driving again. And let's see if Auburn can put a stop to it.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I'm Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, show 34. Big thanks to Bob Stelton of Bob and Graz on 710 ESPN Seattle at 710sports.com. And former NFL cornerback and kick returner Lamont Brightful joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. It's been a good show, Sean Boyd.
It sure has. And of course, we have some great guests coming up on next week's show. We have Michael Stewart, former Sacramento Kings extraordinaire, along with Henry Turner, who is one of the voices of the Sacramento Kings. So it will be Sacramento-based. Shifting gears a little bit from football to basketball. Should be a fun show, Sean Wally.
We keep bringing the heavy hitters. That's why we call them big-time guests. You'll hear them here only on the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next week. We'll talk to you then. For Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. See you next week on the Double.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big time guests. On the Double, the Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up.